Welcome to the Freedom Report.
What I love about Austin Peterson is his love of the battle. He wants to fight.
Austin was, of course, the rabble-rouser, just to make sure I stayed Rothbardian.
We live in a world fraught with danger, and there is a certain amount of danger that the public must endure in order to secure the blessings of liberty.
For economic freedom and personal liberty. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Austin Peterson here, Freedom Report podcast producer and owner of the LibertarianRepublic.com. Thank you so much for listening. I'm here with my buddy Jack Stockard. Jack, welcome to the show.
What it do? How's it going, everyone? I'm back for another one of these things.
Back for another Freedom Report podcast. And today's topic that we're going to be discussing is a philosophical topic. We're going to be discussing an article that was actually shared by Senator Rand Paul, and Ben Shapiro got a little upset, apparently, at Rand Paul and said, hey, your dad's been taking your phone and using your Twitter account.
Ben got sufficiently nettled by that one for certain.
Nettled. Good vocab word, right? Wrap that one up and give that as a gift. Well, that's an expensive word. Death of the Weekly Standard signals rebirth of the right. This is the argument that's made by AmericanGreatness.com. Neoconservatism is dead. Long live American conservatism. That's what I thought when I learned the Weekly Standard would be shuttered by longtime owner Clarity Media. The Standard was a creature of a particular time and place, the 1990s, the Bush-Clinton ascendancy, and Washington, D.C.'s insular, self-referential political class. As such, it never really fit within the broad flow of historic American conservatism. It was always and intentionally something different. So perhaps the magazine's opposition to Donald Trump, his voters, and the America First agenda should come as no surprise. Max Boot described the magazine as a redoubt of neoconservatism in 2002, and he was right. If the National Review of the 1970s and 80s was the journal of Reaganism, the Weekly Standard carried the banner of Bushism. But the Bushes never carried the Reagan mantle and were never conservatives. They were always blithely unconstrained by any identifiable political philosophy other than the unwavering belief that they should run the country. They represented nothing so much as the mid-20th century country club set that was content to see the size and scope of government expand as long as they got a piece of the action. And the Weekly Standard was there every step of the way, advocating so-called big government conservatism at home and moral imperialism abroad. All of it failed. The Bush administration was discredited by its failed policies and incompetence, so it was just a matter of time before the chief organ of Bushism failed too. Did you want to say something, Jack, about that?
No, I'm good.
Okay, he's got a lot to say in general, though. We'll get to that in a moment. But the life and death of the Weekly Standard is really the story of the death and rebirth of American conservatism, which is nothing more than the modern political expression of America's founding principles. The final years of the Weekly Standard and of neoconservatism generally have been a sad coda on what had been an intellectually vibrant political initiative and ensure that its best-known legacy will be cheerleading endless, winless wars in the Middle East and carrying water for hashtag the resistance. Sometime in 2015, Crystal and the magazine he founded declared war on the American right and the Republican Party. We just weren't good enough for them, and they never let us forget it. When Americans complained about his wars, about the destruction of the middle class, about mass immigration that upset the balance in their communities, Crystal said, look, to be totally honest, if things are so bad as you say with the white working class, don't you want to get new Americans in? No, Bill, we have a responsibility to try to help our fellow Americans, not replace them. They're not machines, they're people, our people. But things on the political and cultural landscape are changing quickly, and the Standard paid a price for treating their fellow Americans like pieces on a board. After a couple of decades living like hell, the sclerotic mess known as Conservatism, Inc. is dying, in no small part due to its embrace of neoconservatism. In its youth, it was vibrant, quick-witted, and purposeful, like David, ruddy and good-looking. By the 1970s and 80s, American conservatism was in the full flood of its manhood. It was full of ideas to reinvigorate America after its flirtation with statism and ready to face and defeat the existential threat of communist imperialism. Reagan won the Cold War and kickstarted the economy after the Carter malaise, but the Leviathan state continued growing. But the Bushes killed the Reagan legacy, and rather than capitalizing on his victories abroad to achieve his goals at home, they instead embraced the social democratic impulse that replaces core human institutions like the family and the church with the government. This was the point at which institutional conservatism lost its way and slowly became a shadow of the progressive left, following always just a few paces behind wherever it led. Worse, a new generation of careerists, sycophants, and know-nothings flooded Washington, eager to find a beltway sinecure. The legacy conservative media began to change. Step by step, it abandoned its historic American principles and ultimately came to despise the American people. Their motto seems to come from Horace, the Roman poet, who wrote, "Odi profanum vulgus et arceo," I hate the common people and avoid them. But a new day dawns. The long neoconservative night is over, and a renaissance in American constitutionalism is, if not yet at hand, then at least within sight. It is the prime objective of a new political movement on the right, and there are new institutions leading it. American greatness is one of them. There's much to be done. These new institutions are still young, and they must grow and mature. The political movement whose vanguard Donald Trump has led is developing a new generation of cultural and political leaders. Leaving the Bushes, Paul Ryan, and the Weekly Standard behind is just part of a natural and felicitous reset. The Republicans and independents who supported Reagan and now support Trump want their country back, and they're tired of being lied to and misled by people who claim to speak for them, but who don't know them, don't care about them, and not so secretly despise them. The struggle with the left for the future of the country is ongoing, but that part of the battle is unifying the right around a common set of historic American principles. As with other more virulent forms of left liberal politics, the neoconservatives maintain a sense of aristocratic entitlement to rule, despite having killed almost everything they touched. It is their combination of titanic hubris and priggish moralism that is behind their aggressive advocacy of endless foreign wars and meddling in the internal affairs of other countries. For the Weekly Standard, it made sense to send thousands of Americans to their deaths defending Iraq's borders, but they wouldn't lift a finger to protect our own. As the real-world results of their misadventures come at home to roost, conservatives realize that the Weekly Standard didn't represent them. For years, neoconservatives undermined and discredited the work of conservatives from Lincoln to Reagan, who held to a set of common principles and a common-sense understanding that America is for Americans, and it is the job of government to protect the rights and interests of the American people and only the American people. But over the past few years, Bill Kristol obviously became more transparent about his real beliefs. For example, he let us know in a tweet that he obviously prefers strong, normal, democratic, and constitutional politics, but if it comes to it, he prefers the deep state to the Trump state. And in another, that the GOP's tax bill's bringing out my inner socialist. The point is that Kristol and the Standard's attachment to conservative principles was always provisional and transactional. The Republican Party and the conservative movement were a temporary vehicle for their personal and policy agendas. Now, Kristol and others have moved on in search of a new host organism. That's because the world of Beltway neoconservatism, of which the Standard was the arch example, is only partially about ideas. It's also about power, and more especially about privilege, and that means sinecures. That's a nice way of saying it's what people hate about politics, that it often becomes self-serving and careerist, rather than about the American ideal of building and maintaining the institutions of government that allow the individual, the family, and the church to thrive. The reaction from supporters of the Weekly Standard, many of them former writers for the magazine, has been revealing. John Podhoretz, the editor of Commentary, hyperventilated in a quickly written post that the Standard has been murdered and called its closing an intellectual and political crime. Max Boot also decried the murder of the magazine in Washington Post, describing it as destructive, stupid, and cruel. Worse, he infantilizes Phil Anschutz, the Weekly Standard's longtime owner, and one of the most successful American businessmen of his generation, saying there's nothing unusual in a rich owner losing interest in one of his playthings. Get it? In their worldview, Phil Anschutz is a dilettante incapable of rising to their level, but they were plenty happy to take his money while it lasted. By all reports, Anschutz has subsidized many millions of losses at the Weekly Standard, to say nothing of the embarrassment of the past few years. Perhaps the final nail in the coffin was the revelation by Julie Kelly that Bill Kristol and his claque of never-Trump agitators did not have simply a principal difference, but in fact had become fifth columnists financed by left-wing billionaires like Peter Omidyar. Patrons beware, that's how the Beltway elites view all of you. They'll take your money and then laugh behind your back. It's disgusting, and it's wrong. Neoconservatism discredited itself as a political movement in Iraq just as much as the individuals behind its current incarnation have demonstrated their pride, pettiness, and political and emotional immaturity in the age of Trump. In short, the people who claimed a natural right to rule have proven that they can't be trusted with power, but that knowledge strengthens the American right and makes a restoration of the liberty and tranquility protected by American constitutionalism more likely. Wow, quite a devastating piece that was actually shared by Rand Paul. I mean, you have to think, if he's tweeting something like this, he must believe it. He must mean it. That tweet wasn't deleted, and Ben Shapiro stepped in and said, oh, you're pissing me off. I mean, what's funny is that, you know, Ben Shapiro, I would describe him as a neoconservative, wouldn't you?
Not even quite. I would say that he's a classical conservative in the sense that he probably actually doesn't care too much when it comes down to it about spending on getting involved in these conflicts. And generally on foreign intervention, with the exception of Israel, I would arguably say, and he has the bias there, and it's a fair bias to have. And as far as that, I think beyond, he just kind of encompasses the classical American style of conservative values that, frankly, no one's adopting anymore besides him.
Well, let's sort of like talk about the terminology here to make sure that we all understand, because we're teaching the A students a little bit with this discussion here. We want to make sure that we kind of water it down just a bit so that people can get what we're understanding, what we're talking about here. Neoconservatism generally is a philosophy that has some libertarian domestic policies, right? Some typical fiscal policies, but on foreign policy, it's imperialist. It's I would argue that it's you know, we need to make the world safe for democracy. It's really, it's hard Wilsonianism, right? Woodrow Wilson is actually considered the intellectual godfather of what became modern neoconservatism, right? Imperialism abroad and libertarianism here at home. But paleoconservatism, which is what I would describe the movement behind Trump, the surging movement behind Trump.
The populist movement.
The populist in some ways. And some people bristle when I bring up the concept of populism, specifically in regards to the wall. And we'll talk about that in just a moment. But populism, defined, is anti-elitism, right? And I would say that neoconservatism is an elitist philosophy in many ways.
Now let's get out and play ball.
Right, let's get out. Right. But in terms of paleoconservatism, I think paleoconservatism is much more of a populist philosophy in ways, because it's against the economic and foreign and domestic policy of the elites. So populism is anti-elitism. Paleoconservatism is an America First philosophy characterized by people like Patrick Buchanan, people like Ron Paul, and others. And libertarianism sort of splits the middle in some of these things. Libertarians would tend to agree with neoconservatives on immigration, on trade. That's why the Bushes were more libertarian on immigration and more libertarian on trade, right? They were against tariffs and things like that. But they're with paleoconservatives on things like foreign policy, right? The paleoconservatives are more isolationist, right? That's why not only are they not only they're good on things like foreign policy, right, getting us out of Syria, but they're not so good on trade and immigration, right? Because trade and immigration, we, you know, the libertarians tend to agree with the neoconservatives. So we're kind of flat. Libertarians sort of exist in the middle of paleoconservatives and neoconservatives, in a sense. And you can actually learn more about these philosophies in detail by going to YouTube and searching up 11 different types of libertarians. I've done a long discussion at Mercer Law School about that. But to see Rand Paul share this article, to me, Jack, signals the rise of a new conservative order, of a new order on the right. Would you agree?
Yes, I would agree. Of course, my concern is that, as we mentioned, it's moving towards a more populist trend than, say, a more liberty-minded trend. There are some people working against that grain, but in large part, it's not going to work out. And the thing is that the strength the populists have over anyone else right now is that they have both a strong counter-movement sort of perception, but also are very much, like you mentioned, being more of a ideology or group of the people. And that's something that is one of the biggest problems with the Republican Party, with the conservative movement in general, is that it is really elitist. And me, I come from a small town, so I can say this perspective pretty clearly. Most modern, everyday, flyover state Americans have some pretty simple lives that they want to live out peacefully. And I think that when you understand the kind of stuff that they deal with, the struggles that they embrace in their everyday life, and how they're different from the cities or the fancy suburbs or anything where most folks come in to talk about these kinds of issues from, they do overlook these people. They don't know what it's like. They don't get a good look and a good understanding of what America is like every day. They don't wake up to the sounds of tractors in the morning. No, they wake up to the sounds of At most, maybe the guy they hired to mow their front lawn for them.
Yeah, right. Or the sounds of sirens outside because they live in the cities, right? But I think you've probably zeroed in on the reason why Trump got elected, and I've said this before, is because people who were sick and tired of being talked down to by these coastal elites, they were sick and tired of feeling like the people, these neoconservatives who were in charge of the Republican Party until now, that they were looking down on them, and that they thought that they were fit to rule, and that the rest of us couldn't look after ourselves.
But I'll make the claim that they are. Yeah. They do look down on them, mm-hmm. and it's a constant issue. And it's an issue with the left as well, and it's why that so many working class individuals mm-hmm. rejected the left so heavily. You know, they're starting to fall into that sort of farmer, rural, flyover mentality that the rest of America has been dealing with for the last 60 plus years. In fact, probably arguably even longer if you really look back. But seeing the industrious class now falling into the same kind of public perception, it's no surprise that blue-collar workers are going to lash out.
Yeah, it's, you know, I've been having this conversation publicly in some radio interviews recently. I did one last week in this Washington, D.C. radio station, I believe Sputnik Radio, where we were talking about populism and the concept of what populism is and what it means. Now, there are quite a few ideas that, you know, populists come up with that I tend to agree with. I think that the people who would be part of this right-wing populist movement tend to be anti-foreign intervention, right? They tend to have these paleo-conservative views. America first means that we're not going to war with Syria. You know, Trump pulls out of Syria, they tend to be happy about it.
And he did, and that was pretty amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I tweeted this morning, like, no wall, criminal justice reform bill being passed, pulling out of Syria, Merry Christmas, libertarians.
That's all right. Well, we'll see if the Freedom Caucus tries to eke out that first one from you.
Yeah, exactly. The wall funding, right? It's just, it's crazy that we've had so many incidental and inadvertent victories for our cause, it feels. And of course, many of the paleo conservatives and Trump supporters are going to be upset about the wall. And I think they're probably not, you know, up to speed on the changes that are being made with criminal justice reform bill, things like mandatory minimums and other things that are being put in there that many libertarians support.
Oh, they'll get angry soon enough.
I'm sure they might, but even Ben Shapiro said this is kind of a far cry from the sort of law and order type of president that we had, right? We're talking about leniency, in essence.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome, yeah. Honestly.
Yeah, I think it's a good thing. And then, of course, we did get our bump stock ban. Which does annoy me. And there are a lot of people who are out going boating this week.
Stealing a phrase from Ben Shapiro, bad Trump. Very bad Trump.
Very bad Trump banning bump stocks. But we did get criminal justice reform. We didn't get a wall. And we got troops out of Syria. So it's kind
of... Lindsey Graham was on TV today apparently saying we need to keep folks in there. So I think...
It's a neoconservative.
I think we're about to be done with being happy about Lindsey Graham like we were there for a spell. Which is a shame. He was a funny guy.
It was fun for a while. Our little romance, our little love affair with Lindsey Graham was fun, I have to
admit. But it was a fling and nothing more.
Exactly. It was a one-night stand, Lindsey. Don't think that we're going to let you move in or bring your stuff with us. God, yeah. You have to understand the mindset of some of these people with Lindsey Graham. You know, Lindsey Graham being a neoconservative, he's going to be upset about things like pulling out of Syria. Well, too bad, Lindsey Graham. But he's also going to be upset about things like tariffs. And I agree with Lindsey Graham on that.
Yes. Good Lindsey Graham.
Good Lindsey Graham, right? So, you know, politicians, the way you got to treat them is kind of with sticks and carrots. You know, it's and did you see that yesterday Jeff Flake announced he's going to bring a tax bill before he leaves? He's going to introduce a bill to raise taxes.
You know, there's hardly anyone on planet Earth who has a name just so poignant as to describe their character than Jeff Flake.
He was supposed to be one of us. He was the chosen one. He was like Paul Ryan, somebody we would sometimes whisper he might be a libertarian, and that now look what he's turned out to be.
No,
terrible.
No, he's a hardcore rhino.
What happened to that guy, man? It's just a shame. It's just a shame. So many great men have gone, and some new men and women have stood up. It's fascinating to see where we're at right now in American politics. I feel as if there is a giant change that's coming, and I almost feel as if there's a chance for us to try to split the middle, in a sense, right? To get between the neoconservative view on certain things and the paleoconservative view on other things. Do you agree?
I would agree, but the problem again comes back to making it applicable to the general populace. To make it something that's understandable.
Mm-hmm.
And there are ways to do that. And, you know, a couple of tips here, at least for y'all. You know, big one, number one, break down the philosophy. take that, save it for later, save it for the academic discussions. Mm-hmm. You want to put things in simple, understandable terms. You want to bring up, you know, but you can tease them in. Like, for example, talking about merit. Merit's a big one. You bring that up and you explain it simple, people will get that. I think generally most people like the idea that the successful people should be on, you know, should be the ones we allow to progress in our society and advance and get more of a
meritocratic society. Which is everything that left liberals are against, right?
Exactly.
But in some ways, you know, we've had some major libertarian victories with President Trump coming in, and we've had some libertarian losses. I think, you know, if I had to choose, criminal justice reform and pulling out of Syria is more important than bump stocks, for sure, right? I'm upset about that and angry about that.
At the end of the day, I agree with you, yeah.
Yeah, but getting the troops out of Syria is much more important. The lives of our troops, much more important, right? And certainly the lives of our citizens here, you know, with our domestic criminal justice policies, those things need to be reformed. So I think it's overall a good thing. But I think it's important for us to do like what Ben Shapiro does and call out Trump when he does something bad.
Yep.
And when he does something right, we should praise him, right? Sticks and carrots. Same with Lindsey Graham, same with anybody else.
Well, you go back on my Twitter feed, you'll see when I lambast, well, not actually my Facebook feed, you'll see I lambasted Trump just day in and day out for that Syria missile strike. Mm-hmm. And I think most libertarians did, and I was glad to see it.
And many conservatives did too, yeah.
Yeah, like Razorfist on YouTube. He actually did an entire video calling out Trump, mm-hmm. which is surprising because the guy's always been called an always Trumper, and he isn't. When Trump's wrong, he calls him out.
Well, I even saw people like Reverend Jesse Lee Peterson, you know, big Trump supporter, same thing. He's got a big YouTube channel, and he was talking about how he did not support the strikes in Syria. But I think that this is overall a net positive. It's looking like a pretty good Christmas for most people who believe in limited government and liberty. But where do we go from here, Jack? I mean, it feels like the future is murkier than it has ever been. Like there's with the Bushes in the Bush years, it felt solid, reliable. Yes, we disagreed with them on many things.
It was the devil you knew.
It was the devil you knew. And now with President Trump, it's much more chaos. It's much more anarchy in a sense, right? We don't know what's happening, and there's a fog of war in politics right now. You know, he's got John Bolton in there. You have to know that John Bolton is squealing behind his mustache at the pulling out of Syria, but that's his national security advisor. So in some ways, I really kind of like, I got to have a lot of respect for Trump because he's got so many people whispering in his ear, and yet he does the right thing, you know, despite that. And then he's got, you know, other things that he does that's not very libertarian, but... So let's finish this discussion with a topic. I know that this makes you a little tenuous, but it looks like people are crowdfunding the wall. I was excited to see that because I think that, Jack, I think that that's what we ought to do with more things. I mean, do you like the fact that people are willing to step up and pay for things for themselves? Isn't that how we should fund most things here?
I agree. I love it. But yes, it's going to fail. I know where you're going with this.
Yes, of course it's going to fail. But and what the funny thing is that, like, you know, our tax dollars get wasted. And they get wasted, and people maybe don't know, you know, how their tax dollars get wasted. But at least now with this GoFundMe project, you're going to see your money get wasted in real time in public. It'll be a nice big transparent implosion of that project, because of course you can raise all the money you want, but then there's this little problem called eminent domain, right?
Right. Yeah. More to it too. I think the big thing that everyone will understand is they'll see they actually have a choice in how much money goes in, so they're not going to put a lot in. And that's because the only reason taxes work is they eke it out slowly over time. You do all your taxes all at once, you will instantly become Ron Paul. Mm-hmm. I have had friends say that to me when they became self-employed. It is the inevitable reality of anyone who actually has to take care of their own taxes all at once. Because you realize you're having money gouged right from your wallet. And that's something we, by the way, should totally advocate for. Making it so that taxes are all processed on a nice big sheet where people get to see the money that was taken. But in large part, this thing isn't going to end well. It's not going to succeed.
So I don't know if I'm going to be able to describe this meme accurately. If you'd like to see it directly, you can go to my Instagram page, instagram.com/APForLiberty. And this is talking about, without government, who would provide blank? And so the first question in the schematic is it important? And the question, if you answer no, well, the government shouldn't be wasting money on things that are not important. So without government, who would provide? Question, right? Is it important? If the answer is yes, well, then would you be willing to pay for it even if you weren't forced to? If the answer to that question is no, well, then you go back to the beginning and say, is it important? Well, you're not willing to pay for it yourself, then it must not be that important. But if the answer is yes, would you be willing to pay for it even if you weren't forced to? If the answer is yes, then people would pay for it voluntarily and you don't need the government to pay for it, right? So simple, even a left liberal could understand. Not that it accepted it, of course, but I mean...
Oh, of course not. No, not in a million years.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I can see there's definitely a lot of people who are upset about my stance on the wall. But I mean, you know, the question is like, you know, do you believe in limited government or not? I mean, at the end of the day, you're going to have to argue in favor of eminent domain, and many conservatives do that, right? They're not talking about the Native American tribal lands that go across from the southern border, you know, across from the United States into Mexico. So you do have to, of course, remove the Indians. But, you know, I don't know that the United States has a stomach for another Trail of Tears, especially now with social media. We can't even, you know, gas a child at our southern border anymore and get away with it, you know, like Obama did.
I have another 5 hours before some edgy populist decides to say, well, just build the wall around the Indians then.
All right, build the wall.
They'll say that. They'll just say, cut off a sliver of the country and do it. You know it's inevitable.
Yes. Well, I mean, I've got people triggered like crazy because I'm talking about the GoFundMe. You know, don't forget to go down and forcibly steal the land from the property owners. Or maybe don't ask government to do things on your behalf you won't do yourselves, statists. Yeah, I threw the statist in there. Maybe I shouldn't have done that, but
maybe that's a bit
it
much.
Just felt right. It just felt
calm
right.
Calm down there, Rothbard.
Jack, you and I are in the early phases of hammering out a deal together. We're hoping to reach Twitch partnership status. We've been doing some libertarian gaming. We set up a libertarian gaming channel on Twitch, and we've been gaming for the last 3 months, building up a nice audience. Our most successful stream ever was the other day. We had 200 average viewers, and Jack was with me. And the goal here is to get more libertarians who are interested in games interested in politics themselves, or to get gamers who might be interested in liberty and conservatism and libertarianism interested in politics.
A little bit of both.
A little bit of both. A little bit of both ways. So if you haven't seen our Twitch channel, you should definitely check that out. Jack's going to be stepping up and taking a bigger role in the new year. And if you'd like to support that channel, just go over to twitch.com/AP4Liberty, drop a subscription, drop a follow, and help us out, because that's going to mean that Jack's going to have himself a brand new job. He's going to be a professional streamer starting in the new year if all things go well. So help us get that Twitch partnership status so that we can get Jack him a job making cool libertarian video game streams. Pretty exciting, right?
Yep, pretty exciting.
Pretty exciting. Jack, did you want to say anything else before we go?
I suppose nothing really to add to all that right. One.
Jack Stalker, who's now 21 years old, is out there killing it, spreading economic freedom and personal liberty. It's been a pleasure to have Jack out here to visit with us and be a part of two podcasts this week. The Freedom Report podcast lives on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Podbean, Anchor, pretty much every single channel, including things like Spotify as well, because I know somebody's always going to ask about Spotify. But yes, we are available as well on Spotify. Don't forget to leave us a 5-star review if you like the podcast on iTunes. And if you like everything that you're hearing and you want to support the dank memes and the live streams, you can be a Patreon supporter for just $1 a month, $5 a month, $15 a month, or even our generous Patreon supporters get for $50 a month or more, get things like autographed headshots and other cool prizes and giveaways like signed campaign memorabilia and others. You can check that out at patreon.com/AP4Liberty. Jack, thanks so much for coming on the show. Appreciate having you.
Glad to be here.
Yep, and you have a safe drive back to the People's Republic of Illinois.
God, I'm not looking forward to that, Illinois or the drive. But hey, you know what though? Because I get a chance to do it, y'all should totally go follow me on Twitter at Jack H. Stalker.
Follow Jack on Twitter at Jack H. Stalker. And don't forget, folks, that if you want to subscribe to this podcast, you can do it. You get twice a week. You can support us on Patreon, Stitcher, SoundCloud, iTunes, everywhere that you can listen to Freedom Report podcasts. You can download and help us out. Thanks so much, folks. And you have a very Merry Christmas.
Build the wall.
Boo.